the wink of an eye. I just let you know my heart's in your hands. Go carefully, but still hold it on. Now let it go. You can make it all right, yeah. You can make it all right, yeah. You can make it all right, yeah, yeah. You can make it all right, yeah, yeah. You can make it all right. You can make it all right.
Hello, world. This is Chris Abalo's podcast experiment, and I am Chris Abalo. Welcome to the show, which is brought to you by Dollar Shave Club. Razors, they're expensive, and it's a pain to go to the store and wait for somebody to get them out of that plastic prison that they keep them in, so that way nobody can steal them, because they're high theft. You don't want to deal with that. Forget it. You don't want to leave the house, especially if it's raining. We'll get to that in a second. So what do? Save money. Save yourself some time. Go to Dollar Shave Club and get razors delivered to your house for a dollar a month, as little as a dollar a month. Can you believe that? Believe it. What you do is go to dollarshaveclub.com/cape and sign up. I use the executive razor because I'm fancy. And you can also use great products like Dr. Carver's Easy Shave Butter. Smooth. And for the guys specifically, I'm going to put this on you guys, the One Wipe Charlie's, because there's a better way. To, well, you know. Anyway, dollarshaveclub.com/cape. Shave time, shave money. Welcome to the show, everybody. Broadcasting live from Skid Row Studios in downtown Los Angeles. Always streaming at 9 p.m. Mondays at skidrowstudios.com. Tune in and watch or listen live. And of course, subscribe to the show on iTunes. Subscribe on YouTube. And give the show 5 stars while you're on iTunes as well. It helps the show get recommended. Please spread the word. We do appreciate that. We appreciate you following us on social media at Cape Pod on Instagram, Twitter, and Tumblr. And of course, you can like the show on Facebook as well. Keep up with everything, and all the links are chrisabalo.com as well. So I briefly mentioned the rain. Yes, it rained this weekend in normally sunny Los Angeles, and people lost their minds. Because now I've ragged on people because they can't drive in the rain out here. But now that it's raining, I'm going to say 2 days out of 365 in a year. I kind of get it because I haven't driven in the rain in a little while either. So I dealt with it in the best way possible by staying home because I'm not out there screwing around in the rain. I mean, hey, it was intimidating when I went home after being out here for the whole of 2013. Going back to the great state of New Jersey for Christmas and New Year's and having to drive in the snow, and I immediately said, oh God, I have no idea what I'm doing. I don't know how to navigate this car. And I'm driving 18 on the highway, and I got people lined up behind me because everything's shut down to like one lane because there was so much snow on the road. It was bad. So I'm terrified now driving the snow. I think I'm getting the same thing when it comes to rain, but it's amazing how much things just shut down. There are accidents everywhere. Go to Google Maps for fun. If you hear that it's raining in Los Angeles, and you will, no matter where you are in the world, if you hear people are losing their minds because it's raining in Los Angeles, because everybody knows about the drought, I assume they know when it's going to rain too. Just go to Google and directions from the Hollywood Bowl to Skid Row Studios. Why not? And just no matter what route it gives you, just note all the accidents. You know those little accident icons that Google gives you? Yeah. It's insane because everybody, for as little as they pay attention when they drive, when the weather is clear and sunny, it's amplified when it's raining. It's as if like the wipers kind of do the job of cleaning the windshield off so you're able to concentrate on the road, but people seem to freak out even more. Like they got this heightened awareness because they're so paranoid about anything happening because it's raining. Meanwhile, they don't notice that they're about to rear end somebody, or they forget how to properly apply the brake, or they just hydroplane right into the back of a Hummer, and I mean the car. So, yeah, that happened this weekend. That was nice. Incidentally, started out this episode with a song called Make It All Right by Sammy Hagar, which is from the album Not For Sale, with a capital number 4. And started out last week with another song from that album, Stand Up. the opening track from the Not For Sale album, and mentioned that, ironically, the album is not currently for sale. I was corrected on that. It is for sale, only digitally, only on iTunes. So you can go get that when you're on iTunes after you subscribe to Chris Abala's podcast experiment and give the show 5 stars, because we appreciate it. You can pick up Not For Sale by Sammy Hagar and the Wabaritas. That's right. Wabaritas. You heard me. Because it's a great album, and he's great. Now, speaking of that, as we talked about on the show recently, with all the talk in the media, the music media specifically, about what's going on with Van Halen, I was on Amazon over the weekend because I was stuck at home. What was I going to do? I was shopping for things, so I didn't have to go out and get them. Razors taken care of, though, thanks to Dollar Shave Club. But for everything else, apparently I have to go to Amazon, and we all know the best way to do that. You click the support the show banner at chrisabala.com and use the Amazon link there to support the show. That's right. While we're on that subject, yes, please do. In all seriousness, go to chrisabala.com, click the support the show banner, and you'll see an Amazon banner. Clear your browser cookies and then click that banner, bookmark it as your go-to Amazon banner, and Amazon will give us a small commission on your purchases. And that money goes straight toward the show, to pay for the show here, because we do the show at Skid Row Studios. It costs money. The fine people here work hard to bring you the show on a weekly basis, and their time is worth money, and mine not so much, but the people who work at the studio, absolutely. So make sure to use the Amazon link and just bookmark it as your go-to, and it won't cost you a penny more, but Amazon will give us a little taste of your purchase, and it goes to support the show. But anyways, browsing on Amazon, and because Amazon knows me so well, they had a recommended based on your browsing history. And one of the albums they had listed on there for recommended was 5150 by Van Halen, which I saw was number one in the Guitar Gods category. Now, this is the CD version, by the way. So I clicked on I was like, Guitar Gods charts. I'm sure there's so many subdivided categories in music charts now, just to make say, well, I'm sure there always have been, but now I guess, especially with digital, there's just so many more subdivided categories, subgenres, if you will. And went to the list and I'm like, what? Oh, look at that. Number one in Guitar Gods, Van Halen 5150. Number four as of today, because I checked. 5150 is still number one. Number four is OU812 by Van Halen. Number 22 for Unlawful Carnal Knowledge by Van Halen. Now, there are also two best of compilations, which I previously criticized on the show, which is fine because people who are casual listeners or just know the singles from hearing them on the radio will probably buy the best of the greatest hits collections because they'll get all the stuff that they know, which is fine. Totally cool. Although the albums are great, but I find it hilarious that in the top 25 in that category, Van Halen albums fronted by Sammy Hagar, which just further proves, I think, that people want to hear those songs that they can't play because David Lee Roth is fronting the band. And the fact that some fans have come around who were against Sammy, or anti-Sammy, or just pro-Dave, however you want to look at it, and they are now saying they now appreciate the fact that Sammy cares, whereas David Lee Roth, even though the tour so far seems to be getting some positive attention, they're giving credit to Sammy because he cares. He goes out and he gives a great performance and he can still sing. And same with Michael Anthony as well, because of the disrespect that Eddie Van Halen recently showed Michael Anthony, or just general people wishing he was in the band, particularly for this tour, to make it a true reunion for that Van Halen Mark I lineup. So, yeah, vindication. People want to keep these albums in the charts, which is great. They should, because the songs are great. And it's a shit. There's not another band you can name who has to eliminate an entire decade of their catalog from their live performances, because as much as David Lee Roth says he won't sing those songs, he can't. He's struggling with his own songs. How the hell is he going to sing something by someone who actually is a bona fide singer? And he can't do the splits anymore. So couple that with the fact that he can't sing and really couldn't ever. And you just have a recipe for disaster. But people seem to be enjoying the shows. Eddie's playing great, even on that abysmal live album that we played clips from, I believe it was 2 weeks ago or 3 weeks ago. How long ago was that? Well, it doesn't matter. The Rest of Both Worlds is the one you want. I believe it's Kate 57. I believe that was 2 weeks ago. And Eddie's playing is great. All the more reason I would love to see them reunite with Sammy Hagar. Please make it happen. But the fact that no David Lee Roth fronted Van Halen albums were in the top 25 of the Amazon Guitar Gods charts made me laugh because, oh, look, all albums where Sammy Hagar was a singer are in there. Three of them in the top 25. No Roth era Van Halen albums made me laugh. It was a bit of justification or vindication, I should say. Hey, so I'm going to bring you folks up to speed on something that's been happening lately with me. I don't talk too much about personal things that are going on, but I feel compelled to let everybody know about my recent issues. A couple weeks ago, well, earlier this month, let's say, I was out at the store just browsing, going through the aisles, and all of a sudden felt not really pressure, just weight on my knee, as if there was not a golf ball because it wasn't solid, but like something collecting in my knee. Let's say like a small tangerine, a dwarf tangerine, if you will, if those are a thing. If not, it's dwarf tangerine. Let's work that in Urban Dictionary. A dwarf tangerine in my knee. And it impacted my mobility. I didn't have my full range of motion on my leg like I should, like I normally do. I was like, oh, what the hell is wrong with me? And I was kind of limping around. It didn't hurt. It was just pressure. Where I just had to, I'd really concentrate to kind of walk, and I was still limping because I couldn't bend my knee as I normally would. And I thought, well, it's probably just swollen. Maybe I sprained it. Maybe I did something. I'll just take it easy for a few days. I'm going to ice it. It'll be fine. Guess what? A few days later, wasn't fine. No, unfortunately, it hadn't gotten any better. The ice numbed it to the point where I kind of forgot about it. But if you're laid up, burning through your Netflix queue like I was, you're not really going to notice that you're walking funny because you're not walking at all. So I thought, all right, I'm going to have to go get this thing checked out because initially I wasn't worried. I thought, like I said, it's maybe just a little injury or something, even though it didn't hurt. So I thought, this is going to pass, whatever it is. And since it hadn't passed, immediately I go into panic mode. Like, oh God, I have arthritis in my knee. What am I going to do? I'm 33 and I have arthritis in my knee. And my left knee is the one that's been, frankly, the good leg, because my right knee is weak. That's a whole other story, and you may have heard that on the only podcast that matters, the story with my right knee. So I'm not going to take you through it again. But I thought, now I need to know what's going on, because I still can't walk properly. I'm walking with a limp, and aside from that, just having your friends make fun of you and be like, hey, Limpy, what's going on? And then bursting into tears and hobbling away from them because I'm upset. And then falling over and curling up into a ball and crying on the ground. So for the sake of my ego, I said, you know what? I'm going to have to get this thing checked out and find out what's going on. So I had to go through the whole process of calling insurance, see what was covered, because I haven't been to an orthopedic doctor in California. I haven't had to. So that takes X amount of time, and then nobody can fit me in until the end of the month. So I ended up having to go to an urgent care, which is a great way to kill a day. So if you're injured and you have a day to just give up, to just sit there in a room with no mobile phone service, which is a total first world problem. But if you just need to sit there and kill time, bring a book if you remember what those are, and get a little bit of reading done. Anyway, finally got in to see the doctor, and he's looking at us like, well, it's definitely swollen because it was noticeable enough. And he said, well, what happened? Is it a sports injury? No. I wish I were active enough for a sports injury. Working out too hard? No. So I'm feeling worse now because not only is my knee bothering me, not only am I walking poorly, but I don't even have a good reason for it. It'd be different if it's like I was saving an infant from drowning and I knocked my knee on a rock diving into the water to save somebody, or it's just like I was chasing somebody's lost dog and, tripped and fell or something. And I tend to wear jeans also. Actually, the pair I'm wearing at this moment, completely worn through, is a hole in the left knee. Because the jeans are still comfortable. They're broken in. Why would I replace these? They're great. So I'm thinking people who see me walking with a limp might assume something happened. I got shot in the knee or something because I got this big rip in my jeans and that's the leg I'm limping on. So they probably think something serious happened. If I were smarter, I would have said bar fight or protest for topic of the week broke out and got violent and I was injured in the line of protest. That's a novel. Anyway, so they did x-rays, the whole bit, had to sit around and wait to find out what was going on. And sure enough, it seems I tweaked a tendon. I have no tears. I have no major issues, thankfully. No arthritis. So that was a huge weight off. So now I'm sleeping at night again too. But they gave me a brace They said, take it easy for about 4 weeks. They gave me a couple of prescriptions for pain and some topical stuff to kind of ease the swelling. And just in the 6 days since I had it checked out, way better. Night and day difference from last week. And as of now, at this very moment, anytime I'm up and around and out of the apartment, basically, I'm wearing a brace on my leg. But I'm walking mostly normally. And why am I telling you all this? Because there's an hour to fill. So now you know. You know what we need to be talking about, though? We need to talk a little bit about women and moods and moodiness and hair and all sorts of other stuff. So joining me in the studio at the moment is a man who's gotten much acclaim. And people have been rallying for the last couple months, asking when he's going to come back on the show. And he's here again. Ladies and gentlemen, please welcome Anthony. He's back. Welcome back, sir.
Hello.
How's it going?
Good.
Good. So we were talking about our dear board op Cheyenne.
Yes, sir.
Who is your girlfriend.
Yes, sir.
And her hair is currently purple.
Yes.
And it's gone
no,
through.
No, we got to get that straight. It's not purple. It's Barney purple.
It's Barney.
That's specifically what she told me.
It's is that Barney what was on purple. The box?
I'm not sure.
What's
her?
The official color? Would you mind telling us, Cheyenne?
Official name.
I did say it was Barney purple.
what's on the dye box? Is it turnip or something?
Well, I don't know, because like there's highlights in it, so it's weird. It's in the sun. It's like Barney purple with like,
Barney's throw up.
It's purple.
Let's go with that.
I'm just gonna go with purple.
Purple.
We're simple. We're men. So you were explaining how. Because she's gone through several different hues mm-hmm. in the 6 months I've been coming here. And you have an interesting theory about how it affects her mood.
Yeah. So.
What is she at purple?
So when she's at purple, she's mellow. Okay. She's the mellow Cheyenne.
Nice.
So ever since I've been with her, since last year, me and her have been together from this month. We've been together a year and a half.
Nice.
Okay. So. Ever since a year and a half, she's dyed her hair at least four different colors, four or five. She's had red, purple, blonde for a few days, black. Is that it?
And like faded black, which is like
what the hell
brown.
Is that?
Oh, yeah,
gray?
Faded black.
Faded black.
And then it was like brown at one point.
I wish I'd fade to black. Somewhere.
I stopped dyeing my hair at one point, so it just starts to fade to different colors.
Yeah, so say it faded from like black to brown. Okay?
So her hair is a mood ring.
So yeah, her hair is a mood ring. So pretty much what I've noticed is that every time she dyed her hair, it changed her mood. So I always told her this, and I told her, you know what I've noticed is that when you do dye your hair, it's different. And she goes, what do you mean? I said, okay, when you're my redhead, you're my wild, mysterious girl. You're the one. You're the one who wants to go out, but you want to go out like just me and you. You just want it to be where you want me to hit on you while we're somewhere, and I do it still.
Oh, you guys
go,
role play?
So, yeah, so we'll role play where like
hey,
I'll
Red,
go to the restroom.
Going
I'll, go to, on. I'll go to the restroom, and then I'll go by past her. I go, hey, you eating by yourself? She goes, oh, hi, Mister. Oh, yes, I am. Oh, do you want me to sit with you? Are you waiting for anybody? And I'll look around. And I'll be like, you want me to wait? You want me to sit with you, ma'am? She'll be like, yeah, and then we'll start talking. So.
Does she ever break character? Like you roll up to her, just like, hey, pretty lady. She's like, fuck off, mister. And you got to keep moving.
Actually, she has.
Has she?
She has. Where I've actually went up to her and I was like, oh, hey, pretty lady. Oh, no, I'm sorry. I have a boyfriend. And then I look around and then I look around and I'm like, well, he ain't here today. Well, so now you're mine. And then she's all like, oh, I'm sorry. I have a boyfriend. She'll walk away from me like, hey, girl. And then I'll follow her to her car. And then that's when she breaks character. She just starts busting up and laughing. She goes, I'm serious. I can't do this. It's hard to even keep character with you.
You guys should get into a UCB class.
Yeah. So my redhead is my, it's just one-on-one. Now, I also have my black hair. My black haired girl is the one who's just more like, she wants to cuddle. She wants to just be inside. She wants to just be dark and mysterious. So, and that's the one that kind of scares me a little too much because that's when she always gives me her ugly eye. That every time she has a black hair, she always gives me the ugliest eye, which is like, you know what you're doing. And she's doing it to me right now. See, she's doing it. She knows she's doing it. So black hair, my black haired girl is more of like my, okay, like it's not outgoing. So like when she's black, it's just more of like, she's just strict.
What kind of role play does that involve? Babe, lay down this coffin.
Huh, that's pretty
close
much
close your
it.
Eyes. Is that it? It gets that mysterious?
That's mysterious. Oh.
So what about the blonde?
So my blonde, okay, so I've noticed that the blonde is considered the one that when she's fading. So when her hair's fading, that's when she's the tiredest. That's when she acts like she's the most tiredest person ever, which would have to do with last week. Because last week when we were here, you kept asking me, is she tired? Is she okay? And I'm just like, nah, dude, it's just her hair. Trust me, it's just her hair. Because then last week, if no one knows, last week her hair wasn't purple. It was actually brown, orange, lightly purple.
It was an amalgamation
of the past six months of colors. So last week she was just so tired. And I'm just like, why are you so tired? And she goes, I don't know. But then I've noticed that every time I was staying with her, or like even when we left the show, babe, I need to dye my hair. Babe, I need to dye my hair. Babe, I'm going to make an appointment. I'm going to dye my hair this week. Babe, I'm going to make an appointment. I'm going to dye my hair. Okay, so now I know. Now I found out that my blonde is a scary one, because she's the one who's just, she's tired all the time. She's not happy with her hair. So you're not happy. If she's not happy, you're not happy. So that's that one.
That's a great tell.
The purple one, the one she is right now, she's the spontaneous one. So she's the one who's just like, oh, let's go do something. Oh, let's go do that. Or she's more of the one who's just like, she plans something big. Like right now, one of her friends works at Disneyland and she got us tickets.
Ooh.
Now, if she was the black haired one, I know she wouldn't do it. If she was the red haired, she'd be down, but she'd want to role play it. If she's the blonde haired one, she'd say she's tired. The purple one is the one who's just like, she wants to do stuff. So it has to be done. Right? We have to do it. Like, we have to get stuff done. But she wants to do it in a spontaneous way.
That's fascinating.
So then it's gotten to the point where I've told her she dyes her hair too much. Then it got to the point where me and you were talking about outside. She said, okay, when it gets to the point where my hair's falling out, I'm going to buy wigs. And I said, hell no, I don't want no damn wigs. She goes,
wait, her hair's going to start falling out?
So that's what she keeps saying. Now,
I shed like a cat during the summer, but do you? I mean, I don't women.
No, it's like, it's just not common sense. Like, you dye your hair a shit ton of times, it starts to break
and damage,
and you have to cut it. And I just said that at one point I'm going to stop dyeing it and just wear wigs so I could wear a different hairstyle every day. And it seems like, you know, it'd make more sense instead of damaging my hair all the time.
But so let me ask you, so you can speak directly to what's going to happen. Would you choose the wig color based on your mood for the day, or would you let the wig color dictate your mood after you put it on?
That's a really good question. I think that I would base choosing the wig over my mood of the day.
Okay.
Yeah, that means if I woke up in a bad mood, I'd probably put on like a long, dark black wig.
Yeah, you see?
More
see what
Adams.
I'm talking about? You see? But see, that's the funny thing though, see? So if she wakes up in a mad mood, she'll put on the black one. But if she starts getting spontaneous, she'll put on the purple one. And I
purple,
bet
turquoise, see? Pink.
That's the thing. That's
this wig thing might be the way forward. I think we need to work this out.
See, that's what I'm
just
thinking.
Just blanket across the women. Can somebody check, see if our guests are still here? Because they may very well have walked out. They're just like, I can't believe it. This is going to go.
But then
this
we
way.
Also talked about it is the fact that when a guy puts on a toupee, it looks funny as heck.
Well, it's not socially accepted. Well, maybe it is, maybe it is. And there's a lot of that around here. I'm not criticizing anybody for it. Do whatever makes you happy. But there's a lot of that in this town where dudes are wearing hair pieces, but it's like it's frowned upon or they're mocked for it. But women wear wigs and get extensions and all sorts, totally socially acceptable. I just think that's such a weird dichotomy where it's like guys can't do it, or if they do, they're like weirdos. I'm not talking like Phil Spector, who wears weird ass wigs and, well, he's on trial for murder. I'm not talking about that. I'm talking about dudes who just wear because they're just like, well, maybe they got a patch in the back or something, or maybe they just don't want to, have the bald head on top, and they want to wear a hairpiece, which is fine.
That's what I don't understand is the fact that girls can do it, and they can wear any different color.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, look at Nicki Minaj. She wears pink. Mm-hmm. She wears a pink one, and she wears all different ones, but it doesn't.
Or Katy Perry. Or women Katy love Perry. It. Oh, look at her. She's like cotton candy.
And then it's just like, it gets more sales. But when a guy does it, or if you see a famous dude do it, they're just going to be like, oh, no, his hair's fake. Then
totally.
Then, no, we don't need it. But then it's also what I talked to you about earlier, which is there's always... Me and her went to the museum one day. When we went to the museum, I pointed out a guy, and she goes, I go, babe, look at this guy. And she goes, what? This is an old, about 50s or 60s middle-aged man wearing a dark black toupee.
Right.
And his skin's white as heck, and you can tell that it's a toupee because underneath it, you can see all his white hairs. Yeah, everything else on his body, you can see his eyes are white. You can see his mustache is white. His beard is white, but his hair, but his toupee is pitch black.
Has he not heard of the silver fox phenomenon? Like, women love that. There's look, even some of my gay male friends are just like, oh, a dude who's like, I'm not saying wrinkle, but like a youngish looking guy, but who's got some gray happening. Just like, oh, that's so hot. Like, women that I talk to seem to be big fans of it, and dudes.
But if it's on a girl, girls just start dyeing their hair. So
can I just point out that now having gray hair for women is considered a trend now?
You know, one of my friends I just saw, she uploaded a photo of her face bag, and she has like similar grayish hair, and I thought, she's a year younger than me. What's she doing with grayish hair?
What's her name? Kylie Jenner for that.
Oh God.
Very true.
Does she have gray hair now? Wait, you're not going through.
She's the one that started it, like on Instagram, and she posted like a picture, so everyone started following her like they do,
really?
In everyday life.
Why is it actually coming up very often? Like, because when she got her hair first dyed purple for her birthday, I asked the stylist, the lady who styled her, I said, how often do you actually come in? How often do people come in and ask for gray? She said, it's actually quite often. Wow. But what I found out is when they do get the gray, they damage their hair so damn.
Oh, really?
Oh,
that's
yeah,
even worse.
Really bad,
yeah.
Because you have to. The thing about dyeing your hair is like, what I do is I'm just like, fuck it. I'm just going to go from a different color to black, or from black to right. Like a totally different color. But that entails you having to bleach your hair maybe more than once, and to get gray, that's going to take, like, at least twice.
I colored my hair blonde. I should upload some photos of that.
See, I told her, but see...
back when I was 18, I had to bleach all the color. My hair is borderline black, and it had to get all the color bleached out to color it blonde.
Hey, you see? That's why. But
my hair is super dark.
I've told her.
But I wouldn't do it anymore.
I've told her. I was all like, why can't I dye my hair? She goes, no, you can't dye your hair.
Yeah, well... I don't know.
I was like,
meanwhile, it's okay for Kylie Jenner to have gray hair, and she's
exactly,
11.
You see? And I'm going to do... I told her, I said, please, let me just dye my hair. She goes, what color? I said, blonde. She goes, no. And I'm like, okay, I just want a blonde streak down my hair, or like in the
like
front.
Like a racing stripe?
Yeah, like just one racing stripe.
That'd
I go,
be awesome.
Like a skunk? Like a skunk,
I go,
right?
Exactly.
So, look, Kylie Jenner is 11, and if she can look like an old woman with gray hair, then why can't he look like a skunk? Totally cool. But see, that's what I mean. He's getting judged way more harshly, being a dude who's wanted to do it anyway. You're like 21, 22?
I'm 22.
22? Do it now, dude.
But come I can't, because then if I do it, then she's... then. It's just...
then her hair is going to go black and you're going to be like, well, that's it.
My dad taught me rule number one, always listen to your girl. That's it. That's my rule.
The hair, you know, I shaved my hair prior to friends of mine getting married. That's back in 2009. The last time I shaved my head all the way down. And that's because I was a groomsman and I was going to be in all the photos. And my hair was just kind of, frankly, a little ratty and stringy. Like, it just wasn't in good shape and had a little length to it. And I was like, I don't want to look stupid in their wedding pictures forever and ever. I'd rather just have a shaved head. So I shaved my head. My girlfriend lost her mind and was like, took it so personally that I shaved my head because, and I even said I was going to do it last summer too, because I was working outside a lot.
Yeah.
And I just said, I'm just going to shave my head. So I uploaded a side-by-side photo to Facebook and just threw it open. And all except one woman said, don't you dare shave your head. So I keep threatening to do it, because in the summer, like I said, no joke, I shed like a cat. I mean, I don't have like, you know, all my hair on my pillow when I wake up in the morning, but like in the shower, it's just like, Jesus Christ, what
exactly
is happening?
That's how I feel too.
And I'm like, I just want to shave it and not have to worry about it for a couple of months. But I was like, no, don't do it.
I shaved it one time. I shaved everything except for the top. Mm-hmm. I shaved it completely down to the bone.
Nice.
And I was like, all right, cool. I was all like, all right, cool. So, you know, it was summertime. This was sometime 2 years ago. I was like, all right, summertime, cool. I can just get this. I can get my tan on and whatever. I was like, all right, cool. I go to my grandma, I go, hey, grandma, what's up? She just straight up looks at me and she goes, are you a skinhead? You a KK? I'm like, what? She goes, are you a skinhead? I'm like, what does that have to do with anything? She goes, you look like a Mexican skinhead. I'm like, there's a Mexican skinhead? I go, there's a Mexican KKK? I'm like, what?
She's like, there is now.
What are they called?
President.
And she goes, they're called KKK. And I'm like, no, my grandma. So then I go to my aunts, I go to my uncles. They're all like, dude, are you white? And I'm like, what? I go to my friends and they're just like, oh yeah. When I went to my friends, they're like, yeah, man, yeah, rock on. I love your haircut. I'm like,
dudes, right?
I'm like, yeah. And
all
I'm
dudes.
Like, yeah. But then I realized I'm like, oh yeah, most of my friends are rockers. Most of them have stupid or weird haircuts. So like, of course, when they saw my haircut, they're just like, oh yeah, rock on, dude. I'm like, no, I just got this because, you know.
Me too, when I was 18. That's why I dyed my hair and everything else. But it's like, you're supposed to do stuff like that when you're young. But we're always going to get judged more harshly. So we're not going to be, I mean, unfortunately, yeah, you're at the mercy of her opinion. And, you know, then you do something with your hair, her hair color is going
to change. It's not like it used to be where if guys have long hairs, it was just rock. It was just the fact that they did it. Like, I love the fact that my dad always tells me, dude, you don't know how much guys had long hair nowadays. Nowadays, you have long hair. They just call you so many names if you're a dude.
Mm-hmm.
But back then, when you had long hair, dude, hair don't care. Like, people would rock on with you.
Mm-hmm.
If you watched Metallica and all that, Led Zeppelin, all of them had long hair.
It was rebellion once upon a time.
Was just being rebellious. And
now
like,
you got to wear it in a stupid knot on your head. I hate guys who wear the man bun. It's one of the worst things in the world. All right. What we're going to do is we're going to take a quick break. Our guests are waiting outside, so we're going to bring them in. And Anthony, thank you very much for stopping in.
Thank you for letting me.
You sharing this
we should
hair
start a bid
story.
to either get your hair, either shave your head.
Well, me. We should
or
both
dye
do
my
it.
Hair. Let's see. We should see what we can get most of. You should have people vote.
We should do a survey.
A survey. Who would they rather see? Would they rather see the skunk line or would they rather see the shaved head?
Okay, but this is with you because I'm the host. I don't need to jack. But we'll do it with you. We're going to throw it open to the audience, and then Cheyenne can't blame you. I mean, it's going to be your fault no matter what.
It's going to be my fault no matter what.
Because you're the guy.
When in doubt, it's always the guy's fault.
All right, we're going to take a quick break. When we come back in the studio with our guests, we'll see you guys in a moment. Do you know what time it is? It's time to talk about one of my favorites, Audible.com, the internet's leading provider of digital audiobooks with over 180,000 downloadable titles to choose from across all genres. They have everything and anything you could be looking for. I say it every week, I'm a huge fan of Audible. I listen to my audiobooks on my smartphone, which is great because listen to an audiobook while you're doing something like cleaning the tub or washing dishes or vacuuming or walking the dog, because you won't remember the activity itself, but you're going to remember that cool book you listened to. And to get you started, Audible is offering you a free audiobook download and a free 30-day trial so you can try out their service. All you need to do is go to audibletrial.com/cape, C-A-P-E, and get your free audiobook download and start your free 30-day trial. Listen to it on your smartphone like I do. Listen to it right on my Android through the app. You can download to your device or you can listen through the cloud because everything's up in the cloud. Or you can listen on your laptop, your tablet, your computer, anywhere, any device. I just finished listening to The Politically Incorrect Success System by Larry Winget. And some other favorites I've heard this year are So That Happened, written and read by John Cryer. Yes, Please by Amy Poehler, which features a bunch of guests that pop up for the audiobook, which is a lot of fun. Rocks, My Life In and Out of Aerosmith, the autobiography of Joe Perry. And Daddy Stop Talking, and Other Things My Kids Want But Won't Be Getting by Adam Carolla. Choose from any of these or thousands upon thousands more on Audible. Once again, audibletrial.com/cape and get started. Please welcome to the studio April Morrow and the return of Lauren Sperling.
Hello.
That sounds like a crime novel. April Morrow and the return of Lauren Sperling.
Ooh, I like that.
Maybe, maybe not. Someone's got to buy that URL. These ladies are currently in the play Catalyst, which is happening right now as part. Just to clarify, I don't want to improperly plug it. Is it technically part of the Hollywood Fringe Festival now?
Yes, we were the recipient of the Encore Award, so we are technically still very much in Fringe.
Okay, cool. I didn't know if because I knew the awards have happened, so I didn't know it's technically part because I know you're an Encores, but congratulations, of course, for winning the award.
Thank you.
And all right, well, April, you're new to the show, so tell us your background, where you started, how you got started.
All right, I hailed from the Midwest, Oklahoma. We have cows, churches, and the highest teen birth rate in the country, so that we got that going.
I got
for
that.
Us.
Yeah, number one.
Yes.
Talk about you in Jurassic
USA.
Park.
USA.
Oh yeah, that's
from Enid, Oklahoma, which they talk about in Jurassic Park.
Really?
Jurassic Park 3.
Yeah.
Oh, that's why. I was like, I don't remember that at all. That's why.
Yeah, but I moved out here to get my degree in musical theater. My parents had one stipulation. It was, if you're going to study the arts, you need a degree. And the school AMD out here was offering a four-year program, so I came out. And I don't know, just been, writing has been like a newer venture for me as of late, but I've been acting since, well, I could walk, basically. So.
Yeah, it's that ham gene.
Yeah,
as soon as you have the opportunity to get in front of people, it's like, woo! Yeah, I have the same. I get that too. And you wrote Catalyst.
I did. Yes, I did. I based it on actually a very personal experience I had myself. I based it on real women. And I just one day decided I don't know, I had to tell my story. I needed to help more people than just myself.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So give us the broad strokes then, what Catalyst is about.
Okay. Catalyst, it follows about six girls who are in an eating disorder recovery treatment facility, and they are seeking relief from their demons in a sense. But what makes my show really interesting is that the lead character is very much followed around by a shadow played by Chris Marcos and Adam Chambers. And we very much approached it as a very movement-based role. He has no lines. He's very dark and creepy and scary makeup, and he's very gaunt, and he puppeteers the main character throughout the whole show. So anytime that you see her maybe making a poor choice or struggling with something, he's very much behind it, even so stopping her hands or pulling her back or closing her off in a chair. And it's as the play goes on, she doesn't ever physically see him until the very end, where she kind of steps out of her world and kind of has... It's the equivalent of like the dream ballet in Oklahoma, basically. She has a moment where she sees her relationship through a pas de deux number, and she must physically and actually kill her disorder on stage. But I think what makes the show really cool is also because not only the music and the dancing aspect of it, but it's just relatable. It's a bunch of girls on stage laughing and having fun.
Right. It's like, and could be an every woman's story.
Yeah.
Especially when it comes to speaking to those who might be struggling with maybe treatment or with some kind of disorder.
Yeah.
And not, I mean, that could just be from what I'm getting from it. Admittedly, I haven't seen it yet. I'm going this week to see Catalyst. So Thursday night, if you're going to be there, I'm going to be there. So good news, everybody. Buy your tickets now. We'll get the link to you shortly. But it's funny how working in a framework like that, you can still have somebody identify with some kind of disorder or something that they may be hesitant to pursue treatment with. So
yeah.
Even if they can't relate to an eating disorder, they could still find something that they connect with and look at it as like, oh, wow.
Yeah.
So I do get that part of it where you want to reach people by telling the story, because some people still take their cues and apply it to whatever it is they're going through.
Yeah, it's been so interesting to see the people that have reached out to me, that have written me, that have come to see the show multiple times. I've had a woman who broke up with her abusive boyfriend after seeing the show because that's what she took away from it.
Mm.
I've had numerous people that have reached out and said, hey, I thank you for being so honest. Like, I'm 4 years into recovery from my eating disorder. Or I've had, you know, I have a good friend that's a recovering alcoholic that came to see it and it changed his life too. I think it's just very much you take away from it what you want to take away from it. Even though the subject matter is eating disorders, it's much more than that.
Right.
Yeah, and some people come into it thinking it's going to be just a bunch of girls whining on stage about their problems. And it's not. And like, not just from our perspective, from audience perspective, we've had people say that's not at all what it is. Like, male, female, everyone can relate to it in some way. Like you said, you can take away your own view on the problems or your own problems or whatever. So
right.
Cool. Affecting everyone, not just women, but everyone.
Yeah.
So. Yeah. It's interesting too, especially with, I wonder how, and I'm kind of throwing this out as a general question. I wonder how much there might be more of this now, because there seems to be so much pressure on body image specifically. I mean, for women, way more than men.
Yeah, absolutely.
When it comes to just how in such a Photoshop-oriented society where everything's pictures and everything's look and angles and everything else, it's there's probably more of it than people are aware of now, because that pressure didn't exist 10 years ago before Instagram. Not slamming
media
Instagram.
Definitely plays a large part into it. You know, it's, I think, especially for women, but for men too. And that's something that a lot of people don't realize. Like, there's a gentleman that I know very well who has struggled with an eating disorder for most of his teens. And after seeing my show, was willing to open up and be honest about his struggle.
Wow.
And I think it's just, it's more of an issue than people realize. Yes, the media, I think, plays a part, but eating disorders are like a topical issue. You know, they are a way to cope with life. There's so much more going on under the surface. And I think that's just, we live in a very, life's hard. We have to work really hard. People work really hard. You don't get paid enough. You don't get to sleep enough. And I think we're all just trying to figure it out. And sometimes the way the tools that we use aren't always the best.
Right. And in a way, I'm sure writing it was a way for you to kind of get past certain things, or at least get that out of you.
Oh, absolutely.
Just get that story out of you and just kind of like, it's like that's exercising a demon in itself, especially something that's so personal like that.
Yeah, it was really, really just a beautiful healing process for myself, because I initially went in it very selfishly. I was like, I've always been open about my history with my eating disorder, but I was never very vocal about it. And I kind of got to a place where it was starting to creep back into my head. My thoughts were going a little wiry. And so I sat down, I wrote a scene. I sent it to my artistic director. I said, I don't know what to do with this, but I have this idea. And he's like, oh, you open in June. I'm like, what? Okay. So I got to get this written. But it was especially when I stepped up to direct it, to actually very creatively have to face off with my own demon right in front of me as a director. It was so humbling, and I learned so much. I feel so much stronger as a human being, as an artist. It's like, I feel like if I could do this, which scared me so much, then what else is going to stand in my way, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. If you can get over yourself, I mean, essentially getting over yourself in a lot of ways.
Yeah.
And it's like, well, now what's going to get in my way?
Yeah, exactly.
Some egotistical director who's just like, you know, he's giving you a hard time about whatever because someone forgot to get mustard on his panini. It's just like, I don't care.
Yeah.
This is something. Lauren, how did you get involved in doing the play?
Well, I've known April for like 4 years now. Mm-hmm. We met actually at a Harry Potter camp because we're cool, and then found out that we both had gone to AMDA and everything. And then like a year later ended up my first show at Loft at the table read for a show called Princess Charming. April was there. And so we kind of reconnected, and then we've been at the theater since. And
we always have our wands with us.
We do. We do. They're in my car right now. Well, yeah.
Had I known.
But yeah, and then last year, when April was writing the show, getting ready to put it up, she approached me for the part of Tinkerbell, which was very fitting for a lot of reasons.
Yes.
But I came on for the original run because we premiered it at Loft. Last year, the world premiere, and I produced it as well because I didn't know about April's struggles until she approached me for the show. So about 2 years into our relationship, I didn't know. And after I read it, I was like, I have to make the show happen.
Was that your first reaction to it? Was just reading it like, did it connect with you in a way where it's, if you're not relating to any disorder, was there some... Not to ask you to open up about any demons you're wrestling with privately.
Yeah, no, but definitely. I think, like we said, there's something that everyone can relate to about just whatever struggle you're happening with. And especially my character in particular struggles probably the most out of everyone, except maybe Sam, the main character, when she first comes into this treatment center. And my character is the most in denial about it. So it really, it's a small part, but a really large part in a sense. It's
very poignant.
Poignant. There we go. That's the word. And just her struggle and her story, again, based on a real person, is what really interested me, aside from getting the story out there to help other people.
Right.
So.
And getting to work with friends on it too, which is.
Yeah. And that's what makes it really great, especially this time around, because
we're
almost
all really
of
good
us
friends.
Were in the original cast. We've two new people in the cast this time around.
But they fit in great.
We're all friends. We all get along. We can all joke on stage. Yeah. And it feels real because it is real.
Yeah.
So.
And that was something when we started rehearsals initially with the world premiere that I really wanted to focus on. I wanted these women to know these characters like the back of their hands. And through all of that character rehearsals and processes that we did, we became so close, like actual friends, making jokes up on stage that are carrying over off stage. And I don't know, that's one note or like, I don't know, observation a lot of people give me is like the relationships between all of the women is so true. And it's, well, we're not playing at that. That's just, we have fun with each other.
Right. And that's one of the cool things too, especially kind of developing something like this, is that you get to do it together. And then the performances, because there is an actual relationship there already, it just, that translates.
Yeah.
Because you can't make up, you can't fake chemistry. Really.
Nope.
We've all seen it where it's just like, okay, there's no way these people are getting along. This is, there's something else happening here. Loftensemble.org, by the way, is where you go to check out the events happening in and around Loft, which is the pretty much the core mm-hmm. of the cast. Yeah. Works out of Loft as well. And where is it everybody can get tickets to the show? Catalyst is playing for the next few weeks in Encores.
Yes. You can find our link on Facebook, or you can go to www.theencoreawards.com/2110.
And we'll put that link out as well through the shows, through Cape Pod, through the Facebook page and Twitter, through the social media. You'll get that. And of course, in the Cape 59 post, the post for this show at chrisabal.com, so you all can get tickets. It's going to be Thursday, the next three Thursdays.
Yes, sir. Mm-hmm.
It's happening at
9:30 p.m. at the Complex Theater on Santa Monica in Hollywood.
See that? So it's fancy. So you want to impress somebody, say we're going to the theater in Hollywood, Santa Monica in Hollywood. Mm-hmm. Oh, so buy two tickets or buy three.
Yeah.
Aside from yourself.
That's what's really great about our extension, because we've been generous and been given this opportunity that I hadn't planned for. All of our ticket proceeds are being donated to an individual seeking treatment and relief from her eating disorder. So
that's
ticket
great.
Sales are mean more now than they did for the show ever. So
right. So how did you get into it played as part of the festival, and then there are awards based on the plays that are playing within
yes,
the festival?
Yes, and this was my first Fringe experience as a whole, and it was amazing. I learned so much. I definitely took on way too much on my own, but I learned a lot through the process. And yeah, you basically submit your show to Fringe, you book a venue, and you put the show up. And then at the end, they have an award ceremony. They have wine. It's all fun. And
it was really fancy.
Fancy.
It was too. Fancy.
It was at the Ricardo Montalban.
It was.
Was it really?
Yeah,
it was. At Cannes Theater. That's amazing.
But they give out a ton of awards, and one of them is the Encore Award, which basically means that they co-produce the production and extension with you. So you're paying less money, but you're getting... They're basically saying, oh, this is the best of Fringe, and if you didn't catch it, come see it.
Right.
And then I was named top 6 most promising playwright as well.
Wow.
That was cool.
That's huge.
Yeah. It's an
especially
honor.
Coming out. Yeah, it is. You know what's funny? People don't really, I think we talked about this when Lauren was here, which is at Cape 42, by the way, if you want to go back and listen. Gets very geeky.
It does.
Still a good time. That people don't really associate Los Angeles with having, I don't think they even consider that there's a theater community here, and there is.
Yeah, it's
and
huge.
There's a lot.
It's growing a lot, especially having been part of Fringe this year. Even the Fringe Festival itself is what, 4 years old here, 6 years old
six.
Here?
Six.
And it's grown exponentially since the last year. Last year was the first time I ever attended a Fringe show, because I'd always just heard of how awful all the shows at Fringe were, how poor quality it was. But this year, so many people that we knew were involved in other shows, and the shows that we got to see it's
phenomenal.
Phenomenal, very high quality, amazing work. Most of them are in just black box theaters like ours is.
You have 15 minutes to load your set in, 15 minutes to load it out. It's the bare bones. It's nitty gritty. It's like guerrilla theater. It's why I
get
do
up and
this.
Go.
Right.
Yeah. It's just, it's about the art. The art speaks for itself. You're not hiding behind costumes or lighting or even music. Some shows, you know, it's just, you get in and you go. The work speaks for itself. It's been so fun.
Yeah.
So fun.
See, that's one of the things that I've noticed about theater people, not using that in pejorative, just theater actors in general, performers and people who work off stage and behind the stage as well, is that people genuinely who do theater genuinely like doing it. Like, they're not doing it just because it's a gig till whatever else. And there's a lot of that, which there's nothing wrong with that, but people genuinely seem to love that. And it's fun. Like with the live element is, I mean, having performed as a musician for a while in another life, it's like there is that gratification of being in front of an audience and actually getting a reaction and actually, like getting that feedback. And there's the adrenaline rush and everything else that comes from that performing. And that's one of the reasons I think people gravitate toward it, because you don't get that when you got endless takes on some kind of set.
You don't need drugs when you do theater. Like, I can't tell you, every time I get off stage from performing, it's like I got hit by a car or something. It's amazing.
Well, it's great, because every show is different. And a lot of it is because of the audience.
Oh, yeah.
How the audience reacts affects how you perform and everything. And especially with a show like ours, that has its serious, mostly serious points, but also has its fun points. Mm-hmm. So taking that audience on the ride and giving them that surprise that it's not all serious. Like, we do have fun.
There are jokes, I promise.
It's funny, too, how, I mean, using the comparison from She Kills Monsters, which you both were in, which mm-hmm. we talked about when Laura was on the show last. It's interesting how I went to opening night, and then there's, having seen the show again, I believe, 2 or so weeks later, because of the way some lines land with an audience, there's kind of tweaks and different adjustments made because of that. So it's almost like an evolving, the show itself evolves to suit exactly how there's a response to it. So it's, in that way, not to sound all pompous about it, but in that way, it's a living thing. Totally. Where it actually adjusts, because not only are you performing for people and you need to stay in character, but at the same time, respond appropriately with what's going on. If people are laughing or whatever, or even if they're crying, you kind of can't respond to that. But if they're laughing, you kind of need to take a beat.
Exactly.
So that they don't miss the next line.
Listening.
Yeah. So it's one of those things that kind of keeps you on edge. And that way, it's harder than music, because there's probably a muscle memory element to actually just playing music in front of people.
Yeah.
Compared to theater. I've never done any live performance in that respect. So that's why I look at it, it's just like, wow.
Playing music live is pretty hard. I mean, that's nerve-wracking.
I haven't done it in a while, so it'd probably be pretty hard for me right now. If I had to do it right now, I'd probably be like, okay. Not as soon as I finish here, like the kind of rush, like you said, post-show. I need to wind down for like 3 hours after I get out of here Monday nights. So mm-hmm. I could probably do it now, but if I just had to Thursday night at 9:30, get up and perform, be like, huh?
It'd probably so hard be to
slightly,
go to bed.
Yeah, it'd be slightly nerve-wracking, and afterwards it'd be, But no, that's cool, though. The fact that it's... I mean, not only did you not expect to get this opportunity to continue doing the show, but because of it now, the show gets this incredible boost. You get credit now as a writer, too.
Yeah.
Which, have you started working on anything else?
I have. I've got a couple of things in the mix. I'm writing a Christmas show for Loft. It's basically just about all the family comes over for Christmas dinner, and it's chaos. And, you know, the grandma's dating a 25-year-old guy in a boy band. It's going to be fun.
That's great.
Yeah. So I'm working on that. And I'm also, I've got like 3 or 4 other, I'm always writing something. It just depends on what sticks and what I'm going to be passionate about the most, because I get bored easily.
Yeah. I have the same thing. I'm working on 3 screenplays simultaneously right now. Yep. I've been more focused on one, feature length ones, no less. I've been more focused on one lately, because the ideas kind of keep coming, but I know there's going to be a point where I'm going to take a break and I'm going to go to something that, you know, another one that's in another direction.
Second Nini?
Yes, that's happening still. We've been working on something. Laura and I and Sherry, who you all know from the show, have been talking about doing something for a while. And we're gonna. And frankly, that's been more a matter of financing, too. Having to get the money together, because it's not... It's easy to shoot. Stuff's accessible, but like everything, costs money. Yeah. So that's been an element, too. But no, we are gonna do that. I mean, hey, you've been busy, though, so there's that.
I have been busy. So, I came straight from rehearsal tonight, actually.
So. Yeah, that's true. You two were able to kind of break away.
Yeah.
And pop in. But and that was part of them. Just like, well, she's actually working, so it's I don't want to steal her away from something that's actually, especially with this going into Encore, didn't expect it, but
yeah, not at all
kind of happy results of actually going out and working this play.
Yeah. And can we talk about October?
Sure.
I think we're coming we'll back for NoHo Fringe too.
Yeah, NoHo Fringe is going up for the first year this year. So I thought, well, let's give it a go. Why not? You know,
there are a bunch of little theaters too in North Hollywood. Like North Hollywood's almost become like an artsy kind of district now.
Yeah, mm-hmm.
Like,
I think that's so why they're launching the Fringe there.
See, that makes sense.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, so much so they're referring to as NoHo. Like, it would just been like, oh, North Hollywood. People just would have been like, stay away from there, you know, 5 years ago. But now it's like, it's kind of a cool, it's kind of a cool little district now. And there's cool restaurants and bars, like new places opening up there. And there's a strip on like, you go to like Lancashire or
Magnolia,
or Vineland, or Magnolia, There's like a little strip where it's like, oh, there's stuff going on. There's comedy clubs and stuff. I mean, Acme Theater, I believe, has been there for a while. But otherwise, like, there are places that are popping up where it's like, oh, there are these venues that host these things, which I think people are kind of unaware of. So cool that they're bringing a festival to it. I had no idea that they were doing one in NoHo. That's great.
I didn't either. So, like, I think after, like, a week or two after we opened, April was like, someone wants to take our show to NoHo Fringe.
Nice.
Yeah. Cool. All right.
I mean, not all the details are, I don't think all the details are even on the website yet. It's just that the month of October is NoHo Fringe. That's what we know.
Yeah. Nice. But they want to have Catalyst as part of.
Yeah. Well, I have a friend that's just was willing to produce it. And that was probably the only thing that was going to keep me from it, because I funneled so much money into this one.
Right.
It's like, I got to recover from that. So I only work, you know, a half-time day job. So
it, yeah. Oh, tell me about it. That's what I mean. Part of the thing with working on this short film that we've been talking about is like, well, we got to figure out a time frame, get everybody together when they're available, get financed together because stuff costs money. Because my thing is I refuse to have anybody work for free on anything I'm shooting because there's so much. I'm sure you all have seen this too as actresses where it's just like great exposure, great opportunity for exposure. Get your face out there. We can do that on our own. We don't need, this isn't 20 years ago where it's like, well, otherwise my stuff wouldn't get seen. Now everybody can put themselves out there pretty easily.
Yeah.
And I get that a lot for voice acting things too. It's just like, well, it's a great opportunity for exposure. I was like, I expose myself in a week. That sounds horrible, but on a weekly basis on my own show. This is a clean show, kids. Listen, the parental advisory thing is just a blanket because sometimes the show can get a little odd, but it's not for that kind of cut, just for talk, but that's a whole other story. Okay. Once again, Thursday nights, 9:30 at the
Complex Theater.
It's right on the tip of my tongue. Complex Theater. And the link will, once again, we'll put on the Cape social media. So you should follow us at Cape Pod on Tumblr, Twitter, and Instagram. We'll put those details up there. And of course, you look for the Cape 59 post at chrisabala.com and the links will be in there as well. Do you have anything else you would like to plug, April?
Thanks for having us on your show.
Oh, no problem. Anytime. Very happy. And if this is going in encores, then, you know, definitely let us know. Keep us posted about October.
I will, for sure.
And we will keep
Thank
things
you.
Moving. Yeah, no problem. And Lauren, you got anything else you want to plug?
Yeah, my next show at Loft is called Relationships Suck, where I just came from rehearsal.
Nice.
We've been August 15th, I think. Let me double check because I'm terrible at memorizing things. Yeah, we open August 15th and we run for 3 weeks. And it's going to be awesome.
Yeah, cool. Lauren's playing like the polar opposite of her in real life. So definitely check it out.
I get to be the bitchy, annoying, terrible, terrible girlfriend.
So you still got that I just met the 12th Doctor glow to you right now. So
I did. That was a great comment.
Oh, we're out of time. No, I'm kidding. That was fun. Well, listen, I know there are Whovians who listen to the show. So you want to give a quick answer to that?
Yeah.
How that happened?
Yeah. So
you were at Comic-Con for 2 days.
For just 2 days. I normally am able to go all four, but I had to work. And we were in line for the Star Wars panel starting Thursday for Friday.
I've heard good things about that franchise.
Oh, it was... I cried at that.
I wish them luck.
But Peter Capaldi was walking by, and I don't like approaching celebrities. I grew up here. I see them all the time. It's fine.
Right.
But my friends were like, no, you have to go meet him. You have to go meet him. And so I went up to him and I told him I'm going to Cardiff in November. So I was like, I'm coming to visit you guys. Like, you're doing great. Thank you for being an awesome doctor. And like, took a picture. And
is that the first doctor you've ever met?
Yeah.
Nice.
Yeah. First doctor.
Nice to meet
exciting.
One in his current reign too.
Yeah,
because he's currently the Doctor.
Yeah,
well,
and it
sweet.
Was his first Comic Con. It was a lot of people's first Comic Con, like a lot of actors' first Comic Con.
Right.
Bill Murray was there, surprisingly, first Comic Con, and it was awesome. But yeah, because it was fun to see the difference. Because Jenna had done Comic Con before.
She tours a lot of the cons.
Yeah, but he'd never done SDCC, so it was
that's
cool.
Be mind blown.
And
I can't imagine.
Wednesday night, he walked by the Hall H line because he was like, I've been trapped in my hotel for 2 days. I just needed to go for a walk. So he came and hang out at the Hall H line and like took pictures with people for like an hour and
That's
a half.
That's amazing.
Yeah. So he's pretty cool. It's really nice. He looks super grumpy, but he's actually really sweet. really, really sweet.
He looked like he was... perturbed about something in the photo you posted of the two of you.
It's funny. I feel like he put that face on purpose because he was totally smiling and everything. I could show you another one where we're like totally just like laughing together and it was awesome.
Oh, I think I have to. I think we're going to need that.
Snapped a bunch of pictures.
Because now the Whovians in the audience are going to be like, I need
I'm
it.
So gross from Hall H all day, but I have to get a picture with the doctor.
So. Yeah, you'd kick yourself. You'd just be like, it's still a picture with the doctor. I don't care.
I know.
So loftensemble.org is where you go. To keep up on things, it's Relationships Suck is the play that's coming. And Catalyst, again, Thursdays, the next 3 weeks, limited engagement, limited encore engagement. Yes. The award-winning Catalyst.
Thank you.
No problem. And once again, links will be on the social media for the show. And our thanks, of course, to Anthony for popping in and giving us our... His 2 cents on what's going on with hair color.
It's very
and
true.
Mood. Is it really?
As someone who dyes their hair, it's very true.
I'm sitting here like, I wonder if they're going to walk out because I was like horribly offended. But like, I can't believe he'd say this. But anyway, once again, like the show on Facebook and follow us, Kate Pod, Tumblr, Twitter, Instagram. Subscribe to the show. And please share, spread the word. We do appreciate that, of course. Let people know about the show so they can find out. We continue to bring you this talent on a weekly basis. And tune in live, 9 p.m. Mondays, TheodroseStudios.com. Watch or listen to the show live. So until next week, for Anthony, Lauren Sperling, and April Morrow, this is Chris Abalo, and this was yet another experiment. See you next week.